If you're not treating your personal brand like a startup, you have a hobby, not a business. Wise words from the go-to marketing genius for millennials, Kara Parrish. Join me and Kara for a fun episode that will shed light on what to do and what not to do when it comes to marketing your personal brand. And FYI, you need to listen to this episode. Kara has a secret society of a marketing agency that has tons and tons of personal brands that are just waiting to work with her. And she only works by referral only and does really, really well. So she's doing something right. And in this episode, you're going to learn from her why you need to shift your focus from building an audience to building an audience that cares. Why the ideal client avatar exercise is bullshit. The importance of getting clear on your USP, why you need to appreciate your audience and show them gratitude, and why it's not the size of your audience that matters, it's who. Kara Parrish is the founder of Kara Parrish Marketing and Podcara, an internationally marketing consultant and philanthropist. Her rise to success began in entertainment marketing with MTV, VH1, and Fuse. She toured North America on the Warped Tour with Music Saves Lives. She was a featured voice in MTV Acts for speaking about being openly bisexual on television in 7 countries and being an advocate for the LGBTQ youth in rural areas. Kara has volunteered with the North Central West Virginia Foster Adoptive Parent Association to help aid children in the foster system with childcare while their parents attended support groups together. She went on to work with General Mills, Harley Davidson, Google, and Dove in event marketing and influencer marketing to launch new products and expand their markets. She has worked in India, London, Estonia, Canada, and the U.S., consulting for startups working towards international expansion. Kara left corporate consulting to form Kara Parrish Marketing when she saw the growing need for personal brands to be recognized and marketed as the businesses that they are. Her agency rapidly grew to a 7-figure agency exclusively serving personal brands, all while being referral only. She became a writer and international speaker for Social Media Week. And now Kara is innovating the way personal brands grow their authority with the launch of Podcara, the first fully automated matching tool for podcast hosts and their guests. Whew. Like I said, this is going to be an amazing, amazing episode. Now, for those of you who are ready to take your leadership to the next level, I am looking for conscious thought leaders who believe that integrity trumps popularity. Leaders who value congruency over image, connection over division, and collaboration over competition. If that's you, I invite you to apply to become one of the 10 leaders in the Thought Leader Collective. Head on over to rubyfremont.com/TLC for more info. And of course, if you dig this episode, stay in the loop and sign up for my weekly emails at rubyfremont.com/subscribe. And finally, if you're new to this podcast or a loyal thought leader, please make sure you take a moment to download a few episodes and drop a rating and review on iTunes. Now it is time to dive into marketing your personal brand with Kara Parrish. Welcome to today's Thought Leader, where I'm challenging you to rise up, speak up, and create a movement. I'm your host, Ruby Fremon, and I'm here as a catalyst for you, the new generation of thought leaders. I'm a kick-ass life coach, a bullshit detector, and courageous communicator. I'll show you how to gain visibility, build a cult following, and create impact while increasing your income. Join me every week as I dive into raw and real conversations that will help you amplify your presence, influence, and impact. It's time to unapologetically do what you're here to do and do it your way. So get ready, thought leaders, and let's make shit happen. Hey, thought leaders, I am back with a special edition of Thursday's Thought. And this edition, we are featuring one of my alliance members, Kara Parrish, who has a really cool story with how she came to create what she's now running and why. And I think that this is going to be an episode that you'll definitely want to bookmark, because you're going to learn a lot about marketing your personal brand, about what it actually takes to get yourself out there. And for those of you who are really seeking to bring your message to the masses, this episode should help bring some clarity on how to make that happen. So Kara, welcome to today's Thought Leader. I'm so excited to have you here and we get to talk in this way.
I am excited to be here. This is fantastic. I love the show. And obviously I love you from the Alliance and life in general. So this is great. I'm really excited. And I think that given like some of the topics of other episodes, I think that I can bring a different perspective to your audience that maybe they haven't fully had a conversation like this before. Also, it can be a little direct sometimes. And so can you. So I think we can have a really fun conversation.
Oh, and that we will, for yeah. Sure. So what I think is so cool about your story is you achieved great success at a very young age. I mean, you were working with some massive brands at what age?
My early 20s. Yeah. So by 24, I had worked with MTV, VH1, Harley Davidson. I had worked with a lot of corporate America brands. I had worked with Fortune 500 brands, Fortune 100 brands. So I kind of got into a niche in corporate pretty early on, and that led to a little bit of a skyrocket inside corporate in my early 20s. It was about 10 years ago. So this is when all the brands were like, we have to learn the millennials.
Right.
We have to sell to the millennials. Let's grab a millennial and ask them what they think. So I became kind of a go-to marketing for millennials for corporate brands. And like especially those huge brands, they have their core market, which doesn't tend to be whatever the new generation coming in is. Mm-hmm. A little different with like MTV tries to stay obviously towards the fringe of that younger demographic. Right. But when we're talking about the other ones, that's not their core. And so they really needed someone to come in that could kind of stray them the right direction. And someone with some marketing expertise works in that favor, of course. I became kind of that go-to person for them.
Yeah, the go-to marketer for millennials.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is during that time is really when the rise of digital media and social media started coming about. I mean, I think back then we didn't all know how to best use it. We were just all excited to get our handles. I remember going on every single platform as it would come out and I would grab I Am Ruby on everything. But, you know, it was like, how do we actually grasp this to market ourselves, to build our presence, to build authority. And here you are at the cutting edge of all of it. I mean, how were you able to grasp or get a handle on social media so quick?
I had a couple advantages. So for one, I grew up in a really, really small town, population 200, incredibly small. There were like 30 kids in my graduating class. Wow. And so there weren't a lot of varied opinions happening, right? Everybody really already knew everybody by the time you were in high school. And so that was like the MySpace days. Mm-hmm. And so where I found more people to connect with and to find people that thought about things the way that I did was actually on the internet. So I was one of those YouTube obsessed kids and MySpace obsessed kids. Like I was OG like MySpace famous back in the day. And it's because what else was I going to do? Right? Like right. I literally, there's nothing else in this town. I just happened to be home visiting my family while we're having this. So it's extra perfect that I'm talking
yeah.
about. Nothing else to do in this town, very limited number of people. So my connection naturally came about on the internet, which I think is true for a lot of kids that are the 90s kids, right? And especially mm-hmm. because we were also like kind of the end of the latchkey kid genre. Mm-hmm. Like that age, like now it's terrible. You would never just leave like a 7 or 8 year old running around the house. But back right. then it was like kind of still okay.
Yeah.
And so we were latchkey kids and the internet became kind of our source of all things because it was also how we were being educated at schools. They're like, oh, you know, go look it up on the internet for the first time. And so I was really fortunate to have grown up where I did, when I did, because I think it gave me a marked advantage with social media. I grew up with the understanding that my friends online were equally significant to my friends offline. And even in some cases, more significant right. Than my friends I had offline. So I had that advantage of understanding social media marketing because it was ingrained in my understanding of how communication works. Mm. And then I also was really lucky to have an amazing mentor. So when I first started out in marketing, I didn't want to be a marketer at all. I was actually doing child development to do pre-med because I wanted to do infant neurology.
See, that I didn't know.
Yeah, that's what, and I'd always like joke, my parents would be like, tell everybody what you're going to college for. And I'd be like, to experiment on babies. And they'd be like, stop talking. That's originally what I was doing. And right. I was really broke college kid and I needed a second job. I was working at the hospital because I thought that was going to help me with the career I wanted. And I had a friend who was like, I've got a friend whose life is really hectic. He needs an assistant. Do you care if you're doing someone's taxes and getting their coffee? And I was like, if they pay me, I need to pay my rent. You know, I got gas money. I'm a commuter. And so I got a job being the assistant to the creative director for the largest marketing agency in my home state. And at the time, I didn't know anything about marketing. I didn't understand what he did. It was confusing and also seemed silly to me in the moment. Like, I was like, are you paying you money to do this? You're just walking around a building giving people your opinion, you know? Like, it was crazy. But I didn't understand it at the time. And I've always been kind of outspoken and opinionated. So Damien would have me in like all of his meetings with him. And I couldn't help myself. I'd be like, what if we did this? And he'd be like, shh. Like, you don't know what it takes to do the thing that you're recommending that we do, you know?
Yeah.
But after a few years of working with him, he's brilliant, a brilliant marketer. Mm-hmm. And I got to watch kind of a master in the field do their thing right underneath their wing. So I had a couple advantages early on that I think gave me that ability that by the time I was 21 and 22, not only did I have a deep understanding of marketing strategy and what goes into that and the data that's needed and how they determine success, but I also was so integrated in social media at that point. I was already like this kind of it girl, the way that like 90s internet it girls were.
Right. And so it was like combining what you now learned through your mentor and applying that into this digital media space, which I think is super cool. And then at one point, you know, well, then you start working with a lot of big name brands that we know. And then at one point you decided, I'm going to go my own way. I'm going to create my own agency.
Well, when I think especially, and it might even, I want to say, especially when you're younger, when you're starting out, you're always looking like that top of the ladder. Like you're like, how do I get up there? Mm-hmm. And corporate's how you get up there. You know, it does sound really impressive when you say you're working with particular brands. It sounds very shiny. And people think you're successful. It seems glamorous, especially if you're traveling too, which I was traveling to these brands, you know? Mm-hmm. So it seemed like that's what I was supposed to go after, what I was supposed to go get. And then when I got into that space and I should have been happy, everybody around me was happy for me. Everybody around me was like, wow, that's so cool. That's you're so successful. Like, and I was miserable. Mm-hmm. When I was traveling, I was there for work. I didn't see anything. I saw hotel rooms and boardrooms and people who were older than me and most of the time talked down to me because I was like the millennial representative in the room. They didn't take me quite as seriously. And if anything, I kind of had to be aggressive when I was speaking with them and everything was a fight. Everything was clawing, even when I should, like other people were like, you're at the top. And I'm like, I'm clawing for them to notice me even though I'm in the room. And in a lot of ways that's the way it felt. And then having come from a very small town and being around small business marketing and social media marketing, watching corporate America with a lot of commas, the kind of commas a kid like me had never imagined.
Right.
Didn't think was real, you know. The closest I'd ever seen to that was like a cartoon check on a Disney Channel. You know, I didn't have a concept of that kind of money.
Yeah.
And so watching them throw around money like that, out at like someone's creative direction, and the emphasis a lot of times, and I don't want to say it's always this way or it's still true this way, but back then the emphasis a lot of times felt like it was just on eyeballs, right?
Right.
Because this was also before we've had as great of analytics as we necessarily have now in the digital marketing
space. Right.
So the currency was attention. So they were paying a ton of money for attention. And I'm over here like, I get attention for free on MySpace every day. You know, I'm the most popular person in my college on Twitter, and I'm not even the homecoming queen. Like, what, you know, I like, it was difficult for me to watch those numbers go and for me to be like, why though, when you could just do this better? You know, you could be mm-hmm. more about what you're doing. You don't have to throw this money around. You could have a better focus. And it became really frustrating to me to watch that money just go down the drain, knowing what it could do.
Right.
And so I just was so unhappy. I couldn't do it anymore.
Mm, yeah. It's crazy how, you know, we go after the big shiny thing. And yes, working with these brands, I mean, I think we can both agree, like, that benefited you for sure in some way, shape, or form, right? One is the clout, and two is, like, I'm sure working with those brands and marketing them taught you a lot about marketing. Some of it what not to do, some of it what to do. There's always a reason. And at some point you were like, and this is kind of fucked up. And I'd rather do things differently. And so when you started your agency, what is it? Because you started it to work with personal brands.
I did, because when I was, I couldn't just leave corporate, right? Mm-hmm. Even with the money I had made, I was young, I was dumb, and I was like living like Eloise. I was living in a different hotel room in a different city every night. Mm-hmm. I, you know, did all the things that every like money guru will be like, this is what dumb kids with money do when they first get money. Like, that's right. Exactly what was happening with me. So it's not like I could just be like, oh, I'm going to retire at 24. I needed to have something to pivot to so that I was still had a career and had a trajectory and somewhere to go. And the thing was, at this point, I knew marketing was it for me. I was good at it. I could walk in a room and sit next to somebody who had been doing it for 40 years and wow them. You know, like, we could have a real conversation and I could offer strategies and they could be impressed. So I knew that that was the thing for me. And I had briefly left marketing a few times, like come mm-hmm. in and out of it when I was miserable and tried other things. Like, I did like brief stints in reality television and like all the weird right. things, you know, try when you're a 90s kid.
Yeah.
And so I knew marketing was the one for me at that point. And so I was like, well, how do I take this? Like, high level marketing strategy that I've learned, these years of experience, this clout, right? Mm-hmm. And how do I make something that I want to wake up and do this every day? And so I looked at what was working inside of corporate. And there was a really clear, distinct thing that came forward for me, mm-hmm. which was corporations or companies in general that had a strong personal brand at their helm. Everything came easier for them. It was better for them. They made deals faster. Deals that, if you just looked at the sheer numbers of it, didn't quite make sense. Right. But people were buying into the personal brand. They were hinging it on their belief in the human. And even in corporations or companies that didn't innovate mm-hmm. as quickly as they should, or alienated their core sometimes for that fringe, because I saw that a lot, where they were like, mm-hmm. for the millennials, and they'd alienate their real people, or were so scared to go after the fringe that their target market just got older and older, and then they got right. in this state of desperation. Even these like things that would have failed certain companies didn't fail companies when people felt attached to the person running the company.
Mm-hmm.
It was a different sense of loyalty. Mm. And it's because they bought into the personal brand, to who that person was. And because we were at this point, this convergence point on the internet, where anybody could become a celebrity. It was mm-hmm. technically like pre, like early influencer days, like it was just becoming a thing. And so it was no longer just that you had to be a professional athlete or a model to endorse something and to make a difference. You could be the CEO of a company or the CMO of a company. If you had an online presence, you could sell things you weren't even affiliated with. You could just say that you liked Pringles that day and Pringles would do better that day.
Right.
And so seeing that happen, there was a thing that was emerging. And when you talk to these people that are in these high level positions, they tend to be there because they're high creatives. They're really visionary style people. They tend to be quick start, not so much follow through, but they've got a lot of quick start. They've got a lot of vision, ideas mm-hmm. that are happening to them all the time. But when they're running these massive companies, they don't have the bandwidth to invest in their other ideas. They don't have time to write their book. They don't have time to build their YouTube presence. They don't have time to start their podcast. They don't have time for those things, or they think they don't. Mm-hmm. And so if you sat them down though and said, what if we made you a corporation? What if right. we made content around you? And what if we monetized you? Mm-hmm. What about that? And that was language they could understand because they did come from a corporate world. They were very familiar when you translated what a personal brand meant into a traditional startup language.
Right.
That made perfect sense to them. And so that is where my agency was born. It's the convergence of the high-level strategy that was needed for corporate America mm-hmm. with those more nitty-gritty marketing tactics that you would see in small business, right? Where the dollars mean more, they have to go farther. And you do have to be a little bit more creative in the way that things come across because you have to have authenticity, which is something that brands often get away without having to make an emphasis on, but a personal brand can never get away without authenticity.
Yeah. And like with everything that you shared, you know, what you shared about people becoming, the audience becomes attached to the person. That's how we create loyalty. And really noticing that trend with the corporate brands that you've been working with. It's so true in now this personal brand space that we're in, is people become attached to the person. And I believe just from what I've seen and witnessed online is that personal brands don't really fucking get this, right? Like they're all trying to be something and position themselves in some way that isn't really true to them, but that creates like this weird disconnect between them and their audience. Like they're afraid to show who they truly are. And for me, you know, my entire business was based upon an anonymous Tumblr blog that I started to share what I was going through. Because I didn't want to share in my other social media spaces because I was known as Ruby the Promoter and people knew me in a different way. But I had this whole other life that I was going through and these other traumas that I was experiencing. And I wanted a place to voice that. But what I learned was that was creating the connection. And that slowly became my life. And so I think it's so cool that you saw that even in corporate America and saw that the most successful brands were the ones that were building around the human. You know, like humanizing the brand. And then for you to then, as the genius that you are, create a whole marketing agency around that idea for personal brands. So now I want to get into the like shit that makes us go, because I think there's going to be, we're going to dive into this right now. And I think a lot of you listening are going to feel called out on some things. And I, you know, we're seeing the influx of bro marketing. We're seeing the influx of falsifying the truth or stretching the truth. Or, I mean, we just had a conversation about this the other day of expanding the truth to try and find something that is going to create a sellable story for you to achieve fame or whatever the fuck it is, significance, whatever it is that you're chasing. And that's like just shitty marketing.
It is shitty marketing. And what it causes is even if your problem's not up front, so like there's two ways this can go, which is one, it can be really tough for you to build an audience that cares. So anybody can build an audience, right? Anybody can fake it. Anybody can follow enough people that eventually they follow them back and they make other people talk about them and they start to build some audience. That doesn't mean they're going to sell anything, right? Mm-hmm. So a common thing that we have when people come to us, especially when they've worked with agencies that are just growth focused, is I don't understand. I have 3 million followers, no sales. What's going on? Mm-hmm. Because those followers have no idea who you are.
Right.
Why are they going to buy from you? You used some marketing tactics that were just growth structured to get people to notice you for 5 seconds and forget about you. There are 6 points to a sale on average. So then this is like old school, like original sales guru thing, right? Right. They always told us, like, you better have 6 points before you make a sale. That's how this is going to go down. Here's the thing. If your tactic is, I'm going to friend them on Facebook, where are your points to sale? You made 1 point. They noticed you for 5 seconds. Our attention span on the internet is officially smaller than a goldfish now. It used to be 6 seconds. We're down to 4.5. Got 4.5 seconds.
Okay.
Yeah, of people paying attention. So if it was, you have to think, like, if the old school truism or fact, it was 6 points to a sale, and that's back when people were, like, selling cars face-to-face with, like, 20-minute conversations. Mm-hmm. How many points of a sale do you need now when you only have their attention for 4.5 seconds?
Right.
That's a lot of contact, right? That's a lot of high touch contact. And if all you're doing is following somebody, friending someone, subscribing to someone, leaving one comment to someone, they have no idea who you are.
Right.
They maybe paid attention to you for 15 seconds. Maybe. Mm-hmm. They're definitely not going to spend money on you.
Mm-hmm. And we see this all the time. Like, we get this. I mean, I get this. People sliding into my DMs. It's like, bitch, you just friended me and now you're selling me into something. I don't get it. Like, why? I don't know who you are. I'm not really calling someone a bitch, but if you feel offended by this, then maybe you should change your tactics. If you've done this to me, then yes, I'm calling you out. And, and what's interesting is, people forget, I think, people forget that it's a human being on the other side. Like what you said about the car salesman, yeah, you can't forget that it's a human being because you're in conversation with someone. But when you're online, when you're on Instagram, when you're sliding into people's DMs, it's really easy to forget that there's a human being on the other end. And they have maybe like thousands of other followers or thousands of other people that they're following and other voices that they're hearing online. And so without making a connection to have them feel connected to you, they're not going to give a shit.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you think, like, this is also a place where you used to have very distinct separations between a marketing department and a sales department, right?
Right.
So marketing people did the front end. It was a lot of branding. There was content in it, but because there weren't the tools to have the direct follow through to explain how exactly which points of the marketing attribution led to the sale. And this is getting more and more available to us over time, but that wasn't originally there. So we had very distinct departments, and that's why there was always the silo issue that marketing experts would talk about when they were doing their keynotes. So if you like grab old school keynotes, it's always like, why do salespeople hate marketers? Why do marketers hate the salespeople? Are they bad or the salespeople bad? Like that was always the war that was being held. Mm-hmm. But the truth now is that that line's become more and more blurry because of e-commerce, right? So there are, now there's this merge happening, but in the merge, we've adopted a lot of things from the marketing team and not a lot from the sales team. So these tactics that worked so great for the sales team that we've let fall to the wayside are also partially why personal brands struggle. Because if you think of a salesperson who had to be on a cold call, for example, right? Mm-hmm. They had their little note cards written out. Like you can think of like The Office, like Dwight Schrute with his like notes and Michael with his notes. That's like orange means divorce, and he and Dwight would just open it up and be like, oh, I heard about how's your wife doing? I hear she was feeling orange the other day, and the guy had a your divorce 4 years ago, like that kind of thing.
Yeah,
but salespeople needed to know about the person they were selling to, and there's still tools that are adapting for this online right now. Like Crystal is a really popular tool for salespeople where it goes and sources information that's public about a person, like their most recent tweets, their most recent Facebook posts. So before a salesperson reaches out, even by email, they know some personal elements. But when personal brands don't connect with their audience, they don't end up knowing anything about their audience. So they're just talking to the general public. And right. If you try to sell anything, the first thing that someone's going to ask you is, okay, well, who is this for? Who are you selling it to? And there's no other genre of business where you could be like, everybody on the internet. No, you know, everybody would be like, get out. If this were Shark Tank, they'd be like, go home, Kevin. Like, it wouldn't work, right? But mm-hmm. personal brands feel like they can get away with that a lot of times. Or it's a massive, like, oh, I know my audience. They're right. 30 to 75.
They think they know.
Right. And we have to be like, well, that's right. most of the world. So if you yeah. could narrow it down. But so that also happens a lot with personal brands is that they don't see themselves. They don't treat their company the way that they would treat another company. And if you are not treating your personal brand the way that you would treat a startup, then you don't have a business. You're just trying to be famous on the internet.
And mic drop. So you just highlighted a bunch of shit not to do. And I would love to hear more. I think it's really interesting how you mentioned the marketing, the sales, and they really do go hand in hand, and how personal brands have actually let go of that, the part with sales where you need to know the person that you're speaking to. And I know that this is included in a lot of the work that you do and the scope of everything that you offer. And I know for a fact that a lot of our listeners are those people who are like, oh yeah, I support these people, purpose people, purpose-driven people between the ages of 26 and 52, men and women who are going after their dreams. For those of you just listening to the audio, you should see Kara's face right now. She's literally cringing.
Sorry, but I forgot for a minute there that no one can see me.
Right.
So I'm targeting people with a pulse.
Yeah, basically. And so what do they need to then do? Because it's really easy to say you got to niche down. But like, what do they need to do to make that happen? And then the other part of that is then with everything that you know, and with social media being the engine that it is, where you can literally become a star overnight if something goes viral, and you can also highly manipulate how you're being seen to create rapid growth in your following. How do we then go from understanding the audience to building that presence in a way that's going to lead to the loyalty and the sales?
So the best way to do this is actually to start with what brought you here in the first place. So what brought you to do this in the first place? And this can go back a little bit to, like, if you claim to be a purpose-driven entrepreneur, if you claim to be a heart-centered entrepreneur, or any of those things, soul-based, mm-hmm. whatever, great. Wonderful. Then what part of your soul or your purpose or your heart brought you here in the first place? Because that's the part that people would actually buy into, right? The same way that if we're putting this in like startup terminology, like the reason why we go for Pringles over Lay's is because of that container and the wonderful little shape. And there's so many that fit in there. And then it fits mm-hmm. in like the drink holder in our car when we shouldn't be eating Pringles anyway, but it fits way better and more than fit in there, right? So there's an advantage, there's a USP, there's a unique selling point, which is mm-hmm. what we would say if you were a startup. And so if you are going to look at yourself as a business, your IP, your intellectual property, what you have to offer the world, what is your USP? What makes you unique? And what is the unique reason that people would buy from you, right? So not because, like, the part where I started out, like, what gave me some of my knowledge was that I was from a super small town and these advantages came to me. That is not why people are buying from me. Mm-hmm. No one cares. I don't get marketing clients because I came from a small town. Like, no one cares. That is unique to me, but it's not a selling position, mm-hmm. right? So we're looking for your USP, your unique selling position or your unique selling point. Once you focus on what that is, you create content around that and you push it out into the internet, right? And you don't push it out to who you think is going to respond to it. You push it out on an open end. You start with the beginning. You start with who connects to this. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if at first it's 5 people that connect with it, or 15, or 20, or 50. It's not necessarily about the size of the audience that connects. It's about paying attention to who it connects to. Your audience is going to tell you who they are. you don't have to go and make them up, which is, I think, a thing that often gets misconstrued with what an audience persona is or mm-hmm. what someone's ideal audience is. Because I see a lot of people, and I don't know where this came from or what guru originally came up with this, but the part where you've never sold anything and you don't go look at who responds to your content, but you just sit down and you write out an imaginary person.
Right. That's, I literally just had this conversation with a client right before this. Like, who made this shit up? What, do we just pull out this audience out of thin air and pretend like we know how to fucking serve them?
Right. So great. So you wrote a description of Sheila. Wonderful. Right. Where is Sheila in the world? Where is she on the internet? What does Sheila buy?
What books are on her nightstand?
Yeah, we have no data because she's an imaginary friend. Great. Right. Well, that's not an audience persona. That's mm-hmm. an imaginary friend that you wish you had named Sheila. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's not how we know who to sell things to, right? So you start with your USP, you create content around that USP, and you pay attention to who connects with that USP because those are your people. Those mm-hmm. are your audience. Those are the mm-hmm. people that felt a connection to what you had to offer. Those people are going to bond to you. They're going to have loyalty with you. They're the ones that care if you say, these are the best baby wipes, or this is my favorite mango juice, whatever. Those are the people that care. The Sheilas that you create in your mind, they mm-hmm. don't care about your baby wipes or your mango juice because they don't exist, frankly. Yeah. And even if you did find them, you're more attached to Sheila than Sheila will ever be attached to you. Because you know who Sheila is. Sheila has no idea who you are.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Good point, right? Like, if you're making these audiences out of thin air, I mean, first of all, who the fuck are they? And second, they're probably not in your audience already. And you've just completely ignored those who are already there. So yeah, like, create that USP, get clear on the USP. And that, I love how you said that's the starting point, not the sit down and map out your ideal client avatar and give them a name, maybe cut out their picture from a magazine, glue it on.
I would much rather you be creepy and there be an actual Sheila on Facebook that likes right. everything you post, and you print out Sheila's Facebook and paper to your fridge or something, right?
Right.
If Sheila ever comes over, she's going to be like, what the fuck, Ruby?
Right.
But to start with, that's a real person, a real audience that you could yeah. really find and you could really get data about.
Yes.
Actual, yeah. not
fractional made up data.
Made up data yeah. where you're like, sound kind of sort of similar people to Sheila, and this is what they're into. Well, right. that's not going to work, right? We need actual data about real people. And if you're already a personal brand and you already have sales, fantastic. Go find the lifetime value of all of your customers. Mm. Make a pool of people that have the highest lifetime value. That is your audience persona. That is your target. Those are the people who are paying you the most, because they are the most loyal to you, especially if it's more than one product, if they had to buy back in, right? So yeah. If you've got services and you have events and you have a course and maybe you have a book, right. we're looking for people who bought the service and showed up to one of the events and bought the book, right? Because they're buying into what you have to offer, mm-hmm. not one thing that attached to them, but to you.
Right. They're not just double tapping on your post, but they're actually interested in you, meaning that they care about you. Like you said, they care about you, meaning that that care can lead into the sales and the leads and the loyalty and them wanting to be in your sphere. And that's the piece that most personal brands nowadays miss, because they're so quick, or they're so, they're in such a rush to make a quick buck or to get famous. Become Insta famous, which I know you get a lot of people in your DMs asking you to make them famous.
Yeah. So I get a lot of, will you make me famous? How did you get so famous? How do you get verified? Can you ask Instagram to verify me?
Yeah.
And which I'm like, no. Also, what am I supposed to be like? Instagram, this is Sheila, who I've never met before.
Right.
Let's verify her. She claims to be important. Right. Like, no. But there is a good deal of that. And I think a lot of it comes with the misunderstanding of influencer marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And people assume that fame immediately equals money. And
yes.
that's not the case. Yep. And they also assume that vanity metrics equal fame, which is also a false equivalency. Mm. So someone can build up a very famous looking account from the outside looking in, and none of those people might be repeats, right? It can all go. And in which case, if you're just skimming over, you're like, wow, I bet they make a ton of money. Mm-hmm. And it's not. It's like a 14-year-old in her basement that made an Instagram about cats. Like, it's not that at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's somebody that was more focused on fame than they ever were on money, and they're buying some of this, or they're focused on a new audience. They're not retargeting an audience. They're focused on size over the value of their mm-hmm. audience. They want big numbers, and big numbers on the front end. So like big number of followers, not big numbers in their bank account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is a very different approach.
Totally. It's like, I'm going to focus just strictly on the optics. So I can create the optical illusion of fame and success. And that's what we see.
Because I look famous.
Right.
But that's not the way that any of this works.
No. Just because you have 100,000 followers on Instagram doesn't mean that you're going to make money. It doesn't mean that you're going to create loyalty with your following. And like you said, and we see this all the time with personal brands, like you can make a quick sale on maybe one launch, but then if you're not creating that connection or that loyalty, then you fizzle out. And we see that with a lot of businesses.
And you lose trust, yep. which is one of the worst things that you can do for any relationship, but especially with a consumer relationship. In terms of like, if we put that in more traditional business terms, it would be buying a product that fails, buying a product that gets recalled, right? Then people lose trust. The people who bought that product that in turn, like something went terribly wrong and it could catch fire, they're probably not going to buy something else from that company, right? And so the way that this looks in personal brands is, I'm going to make a product to make a quick buck. I'm going to put it out there and I don't care if it necessarily yields great results or if it hurts someone else mm-hmm. or whatever it might do. Cause you're just like, oh, it's just a little thing. And then I put so much into building my audience. They owe me this, which is also a perspective that people take, like, oh, I'm somehow entitled to get money from my audience because I've been over here taking pictures and posting them on Instagram every day.
Right.
Which no one's entitled to give you shit just because of what everybody else is doing, you know?
Yeah.
That's a stance that people tend to take. So you have to look at it as, for one, have gratitude for your audience. Mm-hmm. They're showing up for you. They followed you. They didn't have to. They're not getting anything out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're going to pay you money, that's money they worked for. That's their hard-earned money they're going to hand over to you. You better be grateful.
Yep.
It doesn't matter if it's your $8 membership or your $50,000 one-on-one service. So most of my clients are extremely high-end business professionals. What they sell is not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
The cheapest thing you're going to get from most of them are their books. And they don't necessarily even consider those to be products. They consider those to be branding and marketing tools. They're not even considering them as ways they make money. And so, especially if you're going to be asking people for numbers like that, if you're into the 5 and 6 figures as your service or your product offer, you better have extreme gratitude for those people that are showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And if your version of extreme gratitude is having someone else make all of your content and putting out some subpar thing that someone else made for you and not even showing up for them,
mm-hmm.
that's not gratitude at all. Then they invested in somebody that isn't going to be the person that they get on the other side, because they invested in what, an agency or a marketer or in some cases a team of VAs mm-hmm. did for you. They're not there for you.
Mm. I love that. Yeah. Because people they do want you. I mean, it's one of the reasons why that a lot of my clients have shared that they love working with me, because they're like, I know it's you responding. Like, I know it's you on the other side. And again, like, people just forget that there's a human being. Everyone's in such a rush to scale and get bigger and gain fame and create income, and that they forget that this whole, like, quote unquote game involves human beings on the other side. And so I love that you mentioned the gratitude. It's really interesting the way that you've shared marketing, because the words that come to mind that you've said, I mean, are the connection, the communication, the loyalty, and really caring. And then also the gratitude and showing up for your audience. And wouldn't it be amazing if all personal brands started doing this? I mean, what a fucking game changer. And of course, like leaning into your USP versus making shit up. Like, what a game changer this would be for everyone. And so for everyone listening, I really hope that you're paying attention to what Kara is sharing with you right now. This isn't about trying to create a brand or a persona that you think you need to be in order to get what you want. This is about really, truly connecting with your audience, communicating with them, creating that loyalty, having that genuine care for each other, your audience for you and you for them, and coming from a place of gratitude, because that's what's going to actually lead to the sales and to the loyalty. Super powerful. And when I say it out loud, I'm like, yeah, well, no shit. And it can be easy to get caught up in the other shit because we see it being done over and over and over again. So, Kara, thank you so much for sharing that. I don't understand where time went, to be honest, because I was like, I feel like Kara has so much more to share and we're at the end of this episode. So in that case, like Kara has a lot of cool shit up her sleeves. She even has a podcast matching system, which just launched in beta round. And before we end the episode, I want you to share that because it aligns with what we're sharing. And I know that if you're a personal brand, especially if you have a podcast or you've been trying to get on a podcast, you've witnessed, you know, either getting slammed with emails from quote unquote PR people representing their clients, trying to pitch them to your show, or you have been doing this. And Kara's created a better way to do this. So Kara, share more about what you have just birthed into this world.
All right. So what I've just birthed into the world is Podcara. So it's www.podcara.com, PodCara.com. And it is a matching algorithm. So think of the way sites like Match.com work, but for podcast hosts and podcast guests. We do a lot of podcasting with our agency clients because we're sticklers for authenticity, because we are not like your average agency in the way that we don't create new content for our clients. We repurpose content they've created, so it always has their authenticity. And that means that podcasts are huge for us because whether they're a host or they're a guest, we get audio, which can be transcribed, instant blogs. We get video that we can use everywhere. So it's all this multifaceted. So we do this a lot. And we were wasting an obscene amount of man hours trying to get hosts on, trying to get hosts the right guests and trying to get guests the right hosts. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, this doesn't make sense. If people can match on Tinder, for the love of God, podcasters should have a data bank that where we can sort things out or something. And everything that we tried, we bought into like concierge programs. And that took so long and it was so expensive. And then we tried putting them on lists that you can find online where you can pay to be part of a list. And they would get these awful pitches. And then mm-hmm. in some cases, we were the crappy people having to pitch one of our clients to a show that they really wanted to be on.
Right.
That we weren't necessarily always sure that they should be on, but they just really wanted to. So that was happening all the time. So we built this matching tool. And so the way that this works is it's a custom algorithm. It's never existed before. We literally went to Google engineers because we didn't want to build something brand new. And we're like, does something like this exist? And they were like, no. Advantage of like, one, working with Google, and two, having other people that have close relations in Google. Mm-hmm. But they were like, no, this doesn't exist. You got to go build this thing. So we ended up building something brand new. And so it's a matching algorithm. Every week you get a match in your inbox, and we're working on making a little more tech friendly. So it's not just email marketing in the future, but for right now it comes in your inbox. Mm-hmm. And you can accept that match or you can deny that match. If you accept right. that match, then it's sent across to your matchee and they accept you. And if they accept you, fantastic. Then you get booked on the show. And it's super easy. Scheduling links or contact forms included in the match so that you don't have to go find someone's information. You don't have this crazy back and forth of like, well, when are you available? Like, mm-hmm. no, it's there. It's simple. It's direct. And you know you're getting someone that's the right match for you, not just someone who wants a lot of PR or right. not just a host that has a brand new show and is trying to pre-book themselves for a year. It's somebody that makes sense based on a lot of different demographic information. And we run everything down to, is there a gender preference on the show? Is this like a woman's empowerment show? Great. We're only going to include women. What topic do you want to talk about? Are you a beauty influencer? You want to talk about makeup? Great. We're going to find you just the shows that mm-hmm. are about beauty. So it's very specific to you so that you don't have to waste time and you don't have to have those negative interactions where you have to give canned responses where you're like, eh. So
right.
sorry, but no.
Yeah. And in order to maximize what you're getting from Podcara, you better follow everything that Kara just shared in this episode. Like, don't you dare show up and not know your USP and fill yeah. out the form with your imaginary avatar, Sheila.
Come correct. When you come.
Yeah. Correct. So I'm going to have the link for that in the show notes. And then if our listeners want to stalk you online, what's like the best place for them to do that? I know you hate stalkers, but.
I exist in all the places. No, at any major social network, you can find me pretty easily by cool. searching my name. Luckily, I've been an OG for a while on the internet. Yeah. I'll come up first, I promise. So it's Kara Parrish, CaraParrish. If you're looking for me on Twitter, it's KaraFNParrish because that handle is old school and I love it too much to get rid of it.
And I'm going to have all those links in the show notes so you guys can go ahead and follow her and stalk her and see what she's up to. And then if Kara calls to you, like sign up, but don't do so without doing the work. As Kara said, come correct.
That's true. And right now we're doing the beta test, like Ruby mentioned yes. earlier. And so we're only taking 400 people in the beta. But if you follow me online, even if the beta's closed, I won't be in my DMs, but there'll be people there. So if you send us a message and you say, hey, I noticed that the beta's closed, but I heard about this through Ruby's show. Can I get in on it? As long as the beta's still running, I will let you into the beta.
Yes.
You have to say you came from Ruby's show or else no bueno.
Yes. And then isn't there another little something that you're offering our audience?
Yes. So I didn't know we'd run out of time, but for NAMO, so November is National Novel Writing Month. And so a lot of people write their novels in November or finish that novel they've been working on in November. So it's a huge time of the year for this. And most services that you go through for publishing are really expensive, especially if they include launch marketing for your book. Like we're talking, most of them are around $10,000.
Right. Totally.
On the high end. But for just between now and the end of November, if you reach out, we're running a special deal that will include the creation of your book, the book cover, the formatting, the publishing for self-publishing, as well as launch marketing for your book from now until the end of November. And it's, I can easily say, about 50% of what you would mm-hmm. be charged anywhere else. But if you're coming for that, again, make sure that you mention that you came from Ruby's show because we'll make sure that you get the deal and that you're taken care of. It's not always this price. We just had a little bit of a moment where we decided that we wanted, honestly, it's a little selfish because we're at 39 bestsellers and we want 40. So come be our 40th bestseller. But yes, so if you come and you say that you came from Ruby's podcast and you're interested in writing your book between now and the end of November, my team has you covered. We'll take care of you. We'll make sure that that book gets written, that it gets formatted, that your cover is beautiful, that you launch it, and that you become an Amazon bestseller.
Amazing. Amazing. Make sure you take her up on this offer. If you're serious about getting your book out there, if you're serious about getting yourself out there onto more podcasts, take her up. Kara, thank you so much for bringing your amazing personality and wisdom to the show. You, I think, lifted or gave everyone listening a dose of reality on what they really need to do in terms of marketing their personal brand. So thank you for that. And for those of you listening, thank you so much for joining me and Kara on today's Thought Leader, where we are challenging you to rise up, speak up, and create a movement. Make sure you drop a rating and review on iTunes. And if you have any questions or you have any insights that you want to share with me and Kara, please reach out to us on social media. My handle is at IamRuby. And then I will see you back here on Monday for a brand new episode of today's Thought Leader.